Okay, I want to start with something from the beginning of the Sedra, and if there's time, which there should be some time at least, to speak a little bit about Shibud Mitzrayim and why we have to go into Egypt, and what did we gain by being there, and what did we gain by coming out. But let's start with something from the beginning of the Sedra, very difficult Rashi, right away in the beginning of the Sedra. The Torah starts by Yidaber Elokim El Moshe Vayomrei Lo Vani Hashem. God speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu and he says to him, I am Hashem Vo'eiro El Avram El Yitzchak V'El Yaakov B'Kel Shagai. I appear to Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov as Kel Shakai Ushmi Hashem Lo Nodati Lohem. So Rashi says in one of his commentaries on this pasuk the following. First, Rashi says, Vo'era el ha'avos. Rashi has to tell us that the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov mentioned in the Pasuk are the avos. They're our forefathers. Now, that Rashi doesn't say things that are superfluous. I think I would have guessed that when it said, Vo'era el Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they were the avos. Why need Rashi to tell me that I appeared to the avos when the Torah says, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? I know who they are. One question. Then Rashi goes on and says, what's God saying to Moshe Rabbeinu? In the end of last week's Sedra, Moshe Rabbeinu comes with a complaint to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he says, Loma Harios, Loma Zeh, he went to Paro, God tells him to go and redeem the Jewish people, and instead of things getting better, things get worse. Paro doesn't give them straw, and they have to go get straw and give the same quota of bricks. And instead of making better for the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu made it worse. So he comes with a complaint. Loma harios, loma ze, loma ze shlachtoni. Why'd you do bad to these people? Why'd you send me? Me'oz bosi al paro ledaber bishmecha. From the time I went to Paro to speak in your name, heiro la'am hazeh. Things just got worse for them. And you didn't save them like you said you were going to. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's complaint. So God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishtachin. It's a shame that I had such great people in this world, and I promised them many times many things, and they never saw the fruition of my promise to them, and they never complained. I told Avraham Avinu I was giving him Eretz Yisrael, and he had went out to buy with an exorbitant amount a burial place for his wife. He didn't say, hey, it's all you're giving me this land. What, I have to pay for a burial plot? He accepted it, no questions. The same thing with Yitzchak and the same thing with Yaakov. Many times I promised them things and they never saw the fulfillment of the promise. They never had any questions on me. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, the first time I speak with you and you see that things don't go the way you thought they would have gone, right away you're complaining. Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishtachin. It's a shame that those people, the avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, are lost and can't be found. That is the Rashi. I have quite a few questions here. First question, we said already, why does Rashi have to tell us, Vo'era el ha'avos, I appear to the forefathers. I know they're the forefathers, it says it in the Pasuk, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What's Rashi adding by telling me, Vo'era el ha'avos? Second question. We'll preface the question with a story, a Chassidish story. The Rebbe of Zusha once said, I am not afraid if they ask me after 120 years, how come you weren't as great as the Rambam? I wasn't the Rambam. I didn't have his potential, his qualities. They say to me, how come you weren't the Baal Shem Tov? I wasn't the Baal Shem Tov. You know what I'm afraid of? They're going to ask me, how come you weren't Zusha? That scares me, that I didn't live up to my potential. You can't have questions, you can't have tainas on somebody, how come he wasn't like this one or wasn't like that one? Everybody has their potential. But you can have a taina on somebody, how come you didn't reach your potential? Okay, I usually don't ask questions from Chassidus Shemaiselach, but it seems to be true. You can't demand from one person because somebody else can do that. He can do that, how come you can't? Parents many times make that mistake with children. Your brother can do that, how come you can't? Your sister can do that, how come you can't? Because I'm not my sister, I'm not my brother. They're different people than I am. So, What's God's complaint about Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe, I had great people in this world, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I promised them things many times, and they didn't see the fulfillment, and they never questioned me. So Moshe should have said, fine, I'm not there. I'm not as great as Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What do you have complaints against me? And thirdly, it says that God said about the Avos, Chaval al da avdin velo mishtachin. It's a shame that they're lost and they can't be found. First of all, that's redundant. If they're lost, obviously they can't be found, because if they could be found, they wouldn't be lost. So why do you have to say they're lost and can't be found? And secondly, are they lost? If God needs help, I could tell him where they are. Their bodies are in Ma'aris HaMachpelah, and their neshamas are in Gan Eden. Where are they lost? They're lost. Lost to whom? To what? Those are the questions. Now for the answers. Avos does not just mean fathers. The Gemara says, "In Korin la Avos elishlosha." We don't refer to Avos, Avosenu, only to three people: Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. They are the Avos. Now everybody has a father, and his father had a father. Why don't we call anyone specifically Avos? Only those three, because the word Avos does not only mean father, but it means a source from which other things emanate. For instance, on Shabbos, there are 39 Avos Malachos, and there are Toldos. There are subcategories. There's the main category and the subcategory. The main category is called the Av. And what emanates from that is called the Toldah. The Havdu by Tumah is the same thing. There are Avos HaTumah. There are main categories of Tumah. And what emanates from those main categories are called Toldos. But the Avos are the main categories, and include in them everything that emanates from them. The foundation of the Jewish people was created by our Avos, by those three individuals. Reb Chaim Volozhiner says that Avraham Avinu went through 10 tests. They weren't just for his edification, but they were to create a wellspring, a reservoir of power for all generations of the Jewish people. He says, if Avraham Avinu would not have been prepared to sacrifice his son for the Ribbono Shel Olam, no Jew in history could have ever sacrificed his life for God or sacrificed his family for God. The power to do that came from Avraham Avinu. He created the power, and we access that power. We use that power. He says something more relevant to all of us here. I guess all of us. He said, if Avraham Avinu would not have passed the test of Lech Lecha, if he didn't pick himself up from Chutz La'aretz and come to Eretz Yisrael, no Jew in history could have ever left familiar surroundings, comfortable living, and moved to Eretz Yisrael. So I guess everybody here did that. Yeah, I assume so. And where do we get the power to do it? It's not easy. Really not easy. I mean, it was easy till you got here, right? It was easy when the Shliach Aliyah told you, but once you got here, you know that that is not what the case was. Okay, I remember coming. I'll tell you a story. I wasn't planning on saying this, but it's just to make it a little bit. I came to Eretz Yisrael about 31 years ago, and I lived in Matit Yahu, still live in Matit Yahu, but at that time Matit Yahu was in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by a few Arab villages who were very friendly to us at that time. And we had a half a road to Yerushalayim that you could only go one way on, and if there was somebody coming the other way, you had to pull off the road. And we're in the middle of nowhere at that time. Now civilization caught up with us, and we're in the middle of everywhere, but then we're in the middle of nowhere. And I had a car, a van then, a Ford Transit, and I was in Tel Aviv giving a shiur one night. And there were no buses to Matit Yahu at that time, right? Nothing. There was one bus a day that went to Lod. When it went to Lod, that was the only place you could go. That was it. So I gave a shiur in Tel Aviv. It was about 10 o'clock at night. And I turned around to come back to Matat Yahu. And I see that I don't have enough gas to get back home. So I stop in a gas station. And I'm waiting and nobody comes out. So I said, it must be self-service. So I got out of my van and took the gas thing. And all of a sudden somebody runs out of the office there. And with hands waving. He tells me, no, you can't take any gas. I said, why not? He said, we're on strike. He said, don't you listen to the radio? Don't you know we're on strike? I said, no, I didn't know. You're on strike? Okay. But what am I supposed to do? I don't have enough gas to get back home, and I need gas. He said, take a bus. I said, there are no buses to Matat Yahu in the daytime, let alone 10 o'clock at night. He said, so take a cab. I said, if I take a cab, I will be spending half my yearly salary on a cab. So I said, look, do me a favor. Sell me enough gas that I can get home. A few liters of gas, that's all. I'll pay you double. Put in your pocket the extra. Pay you double for the amount of what it costs. And that's it. He said, I can't do that. I said, why not? I said, I told you we're on strike. I said, so who's going to know? He said, I don't know. You may be a spy for the Histadrut. I said, do I look like a spy for the Histadrut? He said, you can never tell. He said, and if I sell you gas and they know, I could lose my job. I can't sell you any gas. I said, what do you expect me to do? He said, I'll tell you what. You can stay here till the morning. At 6 o'clock, I can sell you gas. I said, how do you know the strike's going to be over at 6 o'clock? He said, that's the way we work it here. 6 o'clock, strike's over, I sell you the gas. I said, okay. So I went. In those days, there was no cell phones. So I tried to find a pay phone with Asimonim. And I call my wife and try to convince her that I'm spending the night in a gas station. And I told you, see you in the morning. So I come back to the gas station. I said, okay, where can I stay? He said, in your car. You can park the car over here. You're welcome to, and you can sleep in the car. Okay. I got into my car, and I said to myself, that is it. Tomorrow we are going home, back to the States. Right? I'm going to seek asylum in the American embassy, right? And I'm not spending another day in this country. In America, I never had to sleep in a gas station. I never planned to sleep in a gas station again. And we are going back to civilization, to a normal country where they don't make you sleep in gas stations. And I was really, that was it. Tomorrow, we take my family and get them out of here. I must have fallen asleep. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up. I was a little bit more calm. And I said to myself, look, the reason you moved from Miami, where you had a beautiful house, right, with a pool, screened-in pool, whatever, a job with 300 members in your congregation, you moved to Eretz Yisrael that you would never have to sleep in a gas station. That's why you came here. Okay, and now, because you have to sleep in a gas station, there's no reason to stay. Obviously, there must have been other reasons why you decided to leave all of that and to come to Eretz Yisrael. Now, one night in a gas station erases all of that? Can't be. From that point on, I don't think there's anything that could send me back to Chutz Laretz. Okay? At least not permanently, even though the way it seems like in the last few weeks, I live there and I come back here for a visit. But in any case, so everybody here, I'm sure, has similar stories. Okay? You came here, the troubles you thought you'd find, you didn't find, and things you never thought of is what you had here. Okay, if Avraham Avinu did not have the power to go to Eretz Yisrael, and when he got here, what happened right away? There's a famine. He has to leave temporarily to go to Egypt. So nobody would have the power to do that. So all of us take the foundation, the benefit of Avraham Avinu's powers that he created, and we realize that potential that he gave the Jewish people. The same thing goes with all the ten tests. So avos does not mean fathers. It means they were the foundation, the source of all the potential of the Jewish people. they are the avos, and only those three created that potential. After that, whoever came after them accessed that potential, didn't create new potential. The potential of the Jewish people was created by those three individuals, and we'll see, and their wives, perhaps. We'll get to that. Those are the ones we call avos. That's what Rashi is telling us. Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't have a complaint against you why you're not this one or that one, but I can have a kind of a complaint why you're not like the avos, because I appear to them not as individuals, as Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I appear to them as avos, and some of the qualities that they exhibited were not personal qualities, but they were qualities of the Jewish people in general. And therefore, if they had the power, all three of them, to deal with situations where I promised them things, and they didn't see my fulfillment of it, and they didn't question me, that means in the foundation of the Jewish people, there's the potential to have that quality of not questioning. Chaval al da'avdim. It's a shame that that quality is lost in you, Moshe Rabbeinu, and I can't find it. It's there somewhere, but I can't see it. I don't see it. You're not bringing it out. It, for all practical purposes, there, but it's lost in you. That's what Rashi means. If God would have a complaint against Moshe that he's not like this or that individual, then what we asked was is legitimate, right? I can't be like that individual. I'm not him. But I'm not asking you to be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I'm asking you as the avos. They had qualities that they set as the foundation of all Jews to come. Somewhere within your psyche is this ability, and it's lost in you. I can't find it. That's what it means. Based on that, I want to explain the bracha that we give to our children Friday night. And I don't remember, since I've been in Scotland, London, Chicago, New York in the last 2 weeks. Okay, and not all at once. I've been back to Eretz Yisrael twice. Right? And within 2 days I left. So they say Rabbi Kreisworth, Zatzal, traveled more than that I just described to you. And he once said, my kehillah can't fire me because they can't find me. I'm beginning to feel the same way, except somebody in my kehillah, when I told him that, he said, today we have email. In any case, so I don't remember if 2 weeks ago, that's what it was here 2 weeks ago, yeah? No?
No.
How many? Four, 3 weeks ago?
4 weeks.
So 4 weeks ago, so surely we didn't speak about this. Okay. So we surely didn't speak about this. Okay. The bracha we give our children. Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'chemenashe. First of all, it says in the Targum that that bracha is supposed to be given at a bris. But b'cho yivarech Yisrael, through you will the Jewish people be blessed. And the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says b'yuma d'mehulta. On the day of a bris, this is the bracha you give the child. I don't know of any minig. I checked around, Sfardim, Marak, everybody. Nobody has in their Seder HaBris this bracha. Not there. Not there. And yet the Targum says this is the bracha we're supposed to give. How come we don't do it? One question. Second question. If we're blessing our children already, why sell them short and tell them to be like Ephraim and Asher? Tell them to be like Reuben and Shimon? Or even better, tell them to be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Go for everything. Why Ephraim and Asher? Grandchildren. Let them be like the avos. Thirdly, if you're really not blessing them like the avos, bless them at least to be like Reuben and Shimon. Why Ephraim and Manasseh? And there's something else. And Ephraim comes before Manasseh. That's part of the bracha. Ephraim comes before Manasseh. Manasseh was the Bechor. He was the firstborn. Ephraim was the younger. He comes first. Say the following. We just said that the powers that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov created through their tests, through their lives, created the wellspring, the reservoir of powers that all of us potentially have and can access. Right? Not everything they were, not maybe on the same level, but there are certain qualities of the Jewish people that they passed on, that they created and passed on. And we have that potential. How do I know that? How do I know it was passed on? Maybe it stopped with them. So if I would know that Reuven and Shimon had those powers, that would still not prove that I have them. Why? Because Reuven and Shimon grew up in Eretz Yisrael, and they grew up amongst the Avos. They were still, Yitzchak at least, was still alive, right, when they were growing up. So they had contact with the Avos, so Memela, they have those powers. But I didn't grow up in Eretz Yisrael, and I didn't grow up amongst the Avos, maybe I don't have those powers. But Ephraim and Menashe had those powers. They didn't grow up amongst the Avos, they never saw them. So they were already grown. Never saw Yaakov Avinu. They never saw their grandfather or their great-grandfather or their great-great-grandfather. And they didn't grow up in Eretz Yisrael. They grew up in Egypt. They were born in Egypt and grew up there. And yet, they have the powers of the Avos. How do I know that? Because it says, V'yikore bohem shmi v'shem avosai Avraham v'yitzchak. Should call them my name and the name of my fathers. What does that mean? Call them my name and the name of my fathers. This Chumash that we started last week is called Shmos. Right? Names. Why? Because the second word is Ve'ela Shmos. Okay. Here's another name called Sefer HaGeula. It's the Book of Redemption. Every one of the Chumashim has two names. The name that's taken from the first or second word of the Sefer, Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim. But it has a thematic name that the rabbis gave those. Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaGeula. It's called the Book of Redemption. Shmos is called Sefer HaGeula, the Book of Redemption. Vayikra is called Toras Kohanim, the Laws of the Kohanim. Bamidbar is called Chumash HaPikudim, the book of the sensei. They made a census in the beginning when they went into the desert, a census at the end. It's the book of sensei. And Devarim is Mishneh Torah, the review of the Torah. Now, if you think that I just revealed to you something you never heard before, you did hear it before, except you heard it in Greek. Every time you open an English Chumash, what do you see? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Okay, those are the names I just told you. Genesis is Sefer HaYetzirah, the book of creation, Genesis. Exodus is the book of redemption. They exited from Egypt. Leviticus means the laws of the Levium, Toras Kohanim, the Torah of the Kohanim, the Shevet Levi, Leviticus. Numbers. You ever wonder how the guy made a mistake to translate Bamidbar, the desert, into Numbers? He didn't make a mistake. Because it's Chumash HaPikudim. It's the book of Numbers, meaning census, beginning and end. They just were translating the thematic name, not the name that we call it because of the word Bamidbar. So Numbers fits is exactly what it is. And Deuteronomy means the review of the law. Deuteronomy is a law, Deuter is review, second time around. All the names, both names fit perfectly, like a glove. Bereishis, in the beginning, book of creation. Okay, Vayikra, God called to Moshe from Ohel Moed, from the tabernacle, what did he call to him? To tell him the laws of the Kohanim. The desert, Bamidbar, what happened in the desert? Whatever happened in the desert happened between the census in the beginning and the census in the end. The numbers beginning and end. That's the time in the desert between the two countings. And Devarim, what are the Devarim? What were the words that Moshe said? Deuteronomy. They were the Mishneh Torah. There's only one that the two names don't seem to have any connection. Shmos and Sefer HaGeula. What in the world does names have to do with the book of Geula? Names and redemption don't seem to go together. They don't seem to have any connection. And yet, the rabbis say that in the schus, in the merit of the names of the Jewish people, That's why the heavens and earth exist. Bishus the Eila Shmos Bnei Israel Miskaimin the Eila Toldo Shemayim Va'aretz. In the Shus of the names of the Jewish people, the world exists. The Shus of our names. What does that mean? What's in a name? The answer is the name of something represents its essence. One more Rashi before we explain this idea. It says the Eila Shmos Bnei Israel, the Jewish people are as precious as the stars. Just like it says by the stars, Mona Mispor Lakochavim, God counts every star. Lekulam B'Shemos Yikra, he calls everyone by name. So too the Rabban Shem calls every Jew by name. Before they died, after they died, the Shvatim, the Eila Shmos. It says the Eila Shmos, these are the names in Vayigash, it says it again now, and this last week's Sedra. So God considers the Jewish people so important, like the stars, and every star is a name, and the Jews are called by name. Big deal. What is the big deal that God calls every star by name? And every star has a name, and every star is counted, so what? I was just in Chutz Laretz around December, the end of December, and I've heard every year for the last 30 years going back there the following advertisement on the radio around that time of year. It goes something like this. About 30 years ago it was going for $25. This last year I heard it for $75. So it must be a good business. Price went up. They said like this. In America, there are people who have everything. So you have to give them a gift. What can you give a gift to somebody who has everything? So we have a suggestion. If you will send $75 to the following address, we will name a star for the person that you want to give the gift. We will register it in the star registry. We will send an affidavit to the person that you are buying this gift for, that a star has been named for him with the following coordinates and it's registered in the star registry. Okay? Don't do it. Good advice. Why? It's clear night tonight. Go outside, take a blank piece of paper, write on the top star registry. Then name every star in the heavens for whoever you want, yourself, your neighbors, right? For free. And write it down on your piece of paper that says star registry. Then take another piece of paper and write an affidavit. This is to affirm that I have registered in my star registry the names of the following stars. That's exactly what they do. It has no more validity than that. And it's true. They did register it in the star registry, and they sent you an affidavit that it's registered in the star registry. And they also took $75 from you to do that. But you could do it for free. Okay, that's what it means. God calls every star a name, right? And big deal. What does it mean? Now the answer is, the name of something represents its essence, its qualities, its abilities, capabilities, talents. The letters Shin Mem are the inner letters of the word Neshama. Neshama has a Nun and a Hey on the outside, and the inside is Shin Mem, Shame. The name represents the essence of something, its abilities, capabilities, and talents. That's why Chazal say that every person really has four names. The name that God gives you, the name your parents give you, the name your friends give you, and the main name is the one you make for yourself. Now, based on what I just told you, I think it means the following. Everybody has qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents. Where did you get them from? Some are God-given from the inception of your soul. When God created our souls, each soul was created for a purpose, a mission. And it was equipped with a certain personality, with certain talents, abilities, and capabilities to fulfill that mission. That's the name that God gives you. The qualities that God invested in you is the name He gave you. certain qualities, talents, are not part of your original makeup, but they, you get them from heredity. You inherit them from your parents, grandparents, right? Certain talents, people have parents that are talented, they sometimes inherit those talents, right? Your physical makeup, you inherit from your parents, heredity-wise. That's a name your parents give you. Some things, qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents, you learn from other people. That's the name your friends give you. All of that is potential. Potential is a zero. If you have a lot of potential, you have a lot of zeros. If you put a number in front of those zeros, the more zeros you have, the bigger the number is. If you put nothing in front of it, makes no difference how many zeros there are, it remains zero. So the main name is not the potential you were given by God, your parents, or your friends, but what you do with that potential. Do you realize it or not? So the main name is what you make for yourself based on all those potential that you have. What do you realize from that potential? That's what I think that medrash means. If that's the case, when it says that the world was created for the names of the Jewish people, it means for our qualities, abilities, capabilities. The world was created for the sake of the Jewish people. What are the Jewish people? What we have potential, our abilities, capabilities, talents. That's what we are. So the world was created for our names. It also says that the Geul, and that's what it says, that God calls every Jew by name like a star. Every star in the heavens is different than any other star. Its chemical makeup is different. It serves a different purpose in the universe. We may not know what the purpose is of all these stars, but whatever it is, every star has a different purpose because every star has a different composition. That's what it means that God gives a name to every star. He allocates every star with qualities, abilities, capabilities, a certain composition. And everyone's important. That's the same thing with the Jewish people. Everyone has abilities, capabilities, and talents, and the world was created for that sake, and not only that, the redemption is hinted to in those names. That's another medrash. Why is that? Why is the redemption hinted in the names? Because what is redemption? Redemption is when you realize your potential. Until you realize it, it's in bondage. It's enslaved within you. But when you bring it out and you redeem it, you express your essence, you bring out and free your potential from being only potential and free it to be actual, you've redeemed it. That's redemption. Redemption depends on the world reaching its completion, when it reaches perfection. How will the world reach its perfection? When every person reaches his perfection. It can happen two ways. God will bring it to perfection, whether we like it or not, whether we're ready or not, whether we deserve it or not. That's called be'ita. The world can come to its completion and perfection in its proper time. God set a deadline beyond which the Mashiach won't tarry. The world will reach its completion by that deadline, by hook or by crook. So God will bring the world to perfection. Or there's a better way. We'll bring the world to perfection by perfecting and bringing out our own perfection. There's a beautiful story that illustrates this idea that we can bring the world to perfection by redeeming our own potential and bringing ourselves to perfection, and that will redeem the world. It's only a story. The story goes like this. I heard it once at a graduation. There was a man reading a magazine, and his little 5-year-old was bothering him incessantly. So he wanted to make some headway in this magazine and have a little peace and quiet. So he looked through the magazine and he saw that one page is a map of the world. So he tore it out, tore it into 20 little pieces, and he called over his child and he said, "This is a map of the world. It's a puzzle. Go put it back together again and don't come back here till you finish." Now he figured the kid is only 5. He has no idea what a map of the world looks like. The only way he could possibly put the puzzle together is by matching the contours of the tears of the puzzle. He's going to have hours before the kid's going to come back. 15 minutes later, the kid comes back. I finished. The puzzle's finished. He said, it's impossible. Unless you knew what the picture of the world looked like, you could not have put it together in 15 minutes. He says, come and look. And sure enough, on the glass top of a coffee table, the world is reconstructed, the map is reconstructed 100% perfectly. The father says, you're a genius. You must have known what the picture of the world looked like to put it together so quickly. I didn't know. You're 5 years old. You know what the world looks like. He says, no, it was really easy. You see, on the other side of the page, there was a picture of a person. I just put the person together and the whole world fell into place. So if people put themselves together and perfect themselves, then the whole world will fall into place and be perfected. So one of the ways of bringing the world to perfection is by everybody perfecting themselves, bringing out their potential. That is why the redemption, the Geula, is hinted to in the names of the Shvatim. Because if we would just bring out the potential our names represent, that would bring about the redemption. That would bring about the Geula. And that's why the book of Shmos, the book of names, is the book of redemption. Because where is the redemption in our names? If we'll just realize our potential. Now let's go back to what we... Where is that? Who created that potential? We have a tremendous potential. Who created it? Our Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We have that potential. How do I know we have that potential? Because Ephraim and Manasseh had it. How do I know they had it? Because it says, V'yikarei bohem shmi, in them will be called my name, Yaakov says, v'shem avosai Avraham v'Yitzchak, and the name of my forefathers, Avraham v'Yitzchak. And like we said, Avos does not mean fathers. It means that they are the source. So my name, the source that I created, and the sources that my ancestors, Avraham and Yitzchak, created, are in these children. They have that potential. It's passed on to them. Since it passed on to them, it's clear that I have it too. Because I have nothing different than them. They weren't brought up amongst the Avos. They weren't brought up in Eretz Israel. And that potential passed on to them. It passed on to all future generations. That's what we tell our children. Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim de'Chemenashe. God should make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. Meaning, God has made you like Ephraim and Manasseh. Meaning, you have the potential that they had. What was the potential they had? The potential of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. How do I know you have it? Because they had it. And they had nothing over you. They weren't born amongst the Avos. They weren't born in Eretz Israel. And they had that potential. You have that potential. That's what we tell our children. You have tremendous potential. You can be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You can't be like them, because they created potential. We don't create potential. We access it. But you can be like Ephraim and Manasseh, who had the potential of the Avos. You have that potential. You can't create potential, but you can access the potential you inherited. So we don't bless them to be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov created the potential. We don't expect them to be like them. Even the Medrash says a person has to say, Mosa yagiu maisei lemaisei avosei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. When will my deeds reach the deeds of my forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? It doesn't say when will my deeds be like theirs. But when will they reach them? When will I take the potential they created and carry it out and bring it out? That's the most you can do. So we can't give our children the bracha to be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because they created the potential. What can we give them? That the potential that was created, which passed on to Ephraim and Manasseh, passed on to you too, access it. Realize it. That's the bracha. But there's another part of the bracha. You have tremendous potential. But potential, like I said, is a big zero. You have a lot of it, you have a lot of zeros. If you don't access that potential, it's worthless. And therefore, Ephraim comes before Manasseh. Because even though Manasseh was the Bechor, he was the firstborn, and he had more potential. But Yaakov saw in his prophetic vision that Ephraim would access throughout history more of his lesser potential than Menasseh accessed more of his more potential. So even though Menasseh had more potential, Ephraim realized more of his potential than Menasseh did. So who comes first? Not the one with the more potential, the one who accesses it. Vayosem is Ephraim, his name Menasseh. I'm telling you, you have tremendous potential. I'm also telling you, potential is not the main thing. It's what you do with it. And therefore, Ephraim comes before Menasseh. He did more with his potential than Menasseh did with his greater potential. That's the bracha we give our children. What do we say by a bris? What's the bracha we give by a bris? Kishem shenichnas lebris. Just like you got came to the bris, came you konesh letorah lechuppah maishim tov. So too you should come to Torah chuppah maishim tov. That's a simple translation. But according to what we're saying, there's a much deeper translation. Kishem, with the name that you came into the bris. When does a Jewish child inherit? When does the potential of the avos become operative? So they say by the bris, by a boy. A girl could be as soon as she's born. So kishem, with that name that you came into the bris, meaning the name is your potential, your abilities, capabilities, talents, with which you came into this bris, and where did you get them from? From Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? And you inherited them just like Ephraim and Menasseh. Kishem shenichnas lebris. Now, Kain Yukanes, now go and take those qualities, abilities, capabilities, and talents, and use them for Torah, for Chuppah, for Maisim Tovim. Now, realize them. That's exactly the blessing of Yisimcha Elohim, Kephraim, Nechem, Menasseh, the way we described it, except it's paraphrasing it. It's explaining it. This is what the bracha is. With that potential, those qualities that you came into the bris, now realize them throughout your life, Torah, Chuppah, Maisim Tov. So we do say that bracha, except we paraphrase it. We explain it. We don't just give it the way that it is in the Torah. One problem. What's the bracha we give our daughters? Yisimech Elokim, Kisara, Rivka, Rachel, Valeya. By the daughters, we do give them the bracha to be like the Imahos. So why women can get the bracha to be like the Imahos and men can only get a bracha to be like the Shvatim, and not just the, but the Shvatim that carried on the potential of the Avos. But the girls go direct to the top. They're like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valeya. Why? So I have two answers. One the women will like, one they won't like. I'll tell you the one you won't like first, and we'll end with a better thing. This part, at least. The one you won't like is the following. Could be that the Imahos created no potential either. They just helped their husbands create potential. They were an Ezer Kenegdo, but they themselves didn't create potential. So you can be, a girl can be like the Imahos. The Imahos didn't create any potential, you're not doing it either, just access the potential that the Imahos got from the Avos. But you can't tell a boy to be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov because they created potential and you can't do that. You can access that potential, can't create it. That's one. But then I think there's a better answer. And that's the following. A boy can't create new potential. So he can't be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. The most he can be is like the Shvatim, and we said why Ephraim and Menasseh, because they obviously inherited the potential the Avos created. But a girl can create new potential. A woman has the ability to bring new life into this world from her body. So she can create new potential. She can create new life. So a girl can be like the Imahos. They did create potential. And she can be like them because she can create new potential too. So a girl has the ability to create new potential. We can give her a bracha to be mamash like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. A boy can't create new potential. The most he can do is access the potential he has. He can't be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. He can be like Ephraim Menasseh. That's the bracha. Okay, any questions on that? Now we'll go to something else interesting. Okay, the In this week's Sedra, we start the 10 plagues. They're finished in next week's Sedra. 7 of them are here. 3 of them are saved for next week's Sedra. What was the purpose of the 10 plagues? So they had a few purposes. In fact, the 10 plagues were done through the matah, through the staff. A staff has a few different purposes. One is it's something that you can rest on and lean on. It supports. A staff can also be used to hit and punish. It can also be used as a sign of power. Right? Person who holds a staff holds a sign of power. The purpose of the makos were all of those. On the one hand, they were to punish the Egyptians. Midah connected Midah. There's many medrashim, right? The Egyptians made the Jews water carriers, so fine. So we're going to turn your water into blood, and you're going to have to go and get your water from the Jews and pay for it, not to use the Jews as slave labor. And so on, each of the things. So one purpose of the 10 plagues was a punishment for the Egyptians. There was a second purpose, and that is to show God's power in the world, that he controls nature. Nature is not a separate God to itself, it's controlled by God. And thirdly, to show a support, to teach the Jewish people, not only the Egyptians, to show God's power to the Egyptians, teach the Jewish people of God's power. Now part of that is that no time now to go through the whole thing, but one of the ideas of Shibud Mitzrayim, there are many, why we had to be slaves in Egypt for 210 years. One idea was that God, Amzu Yotzarti Li, all other nations evolve, but we were created by God to be a nation. All the accoutrements of nationhood, that we have a identity, a common identity that makes every nation different. They have a national identity, and every nation has its resources that make it special. Right? Some nations have oil, and some nations have gold, and some nations have certain talents they have or whatever. Right? Those are their resources. And lastly, we have a purpose. Every nation has a purpose, what they can accomplish. You take your identity and your resources, put it together. That's what you create. That's what you contribute to the welfare of the world. So what makes a nation is three things: the identity, resources, and goal. God wanted us to be a totally God-created nation. Not where we should evolve with our own identity, our own resources, our own goals. So God therefore took us into Mitzrayim and took away from us all those three things. We lost our identity as a nation because we were swallowed up by a host nation, right? God took one nation outside of another nation. We basically lost our identity as a nation by being enslaved in Egypt. And then we lost our resources. Because when you're a slave, you don't own anything. Even the master owns your body, let alone your other resources. Mashakana Evid Kana Rabo. Whatever a slave owns is owned by his master. So God took away our resources. And he also took away our purpose in life. Because in Mitzrayim, we did Avodas Perech. Avodas Perech is work without a purpose. The kind of work that is debilitating is when you have to work and there's no, you don't accomplish anything. That kind of work is debilitating. When you accomplish something, you're proud of your accomplishment. It's worth working for an accomplishment. When you have no accomplishment, that's called Avodas Perech. They said that they made us build cities on sand, and when they were finished, they fell in, that would be built again. We never saw a goal. We never saw a result of our work. It just was destroyed and had to be done again. It was just busy work. It wasn't work that had a purpose. And that way God took away our purpose. And then he gave all those things back to us when he redeemed us. He gave us back our identity. He gave us back our resources. He gave us back a purpose. That was, in a nutshell, right, the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim. God wanted to create us from scratch. And any identity, resources, or goal we had before we went down to Mitzrayim were obliterated by the Geirus, being a stranger and losing our identity, being a slave and losing our resources, and Inui, and being oppressed with Avodas Perech and losing our purpose. And then God took us out of Egypt and gave us those things God-given. So we are a God-made nation. We're not a self-made nation. But before God did that, he wanted to show us how corrupt the identity, resources, and goals of Egypt were when they're only man-made. And they're totally, people think that they're self-made people, and not God-made people. So the 10 plagues were split into three groups. The first three, Dam, Tzvardei, Kinim, took away the identity. It showed how corrupt the identity of the Egyptians were. And we should learn from that, that this is not the kind of identity we want. And the next three, Arov, Dever, and Shechin, took away their resources and showed how corrupt they were. And the last four, Barad, Arba, Choshech, Makas, Bechoros, took away their purpose. Now, in a nutshell, how is that? The first three, Dam, Tzvardei, and Kinim, dealt with the Nile turning to blood, the Nile producing frogs, and the earth of Egypt turning into lice. How did Egypt identify with the Nile and with the land? So those two things were shown to be corrupt. We're going to turn this to blood, this to be frogs, and whatever, which if there's time, we'll just mention one of them. The next three were their resources. Arov took away their homes, because the wild animals came and took away the privacy of their homes, which is man's castle, this is home. So that took away one resource. Dever took away their cattle, which was their spiritual resource. These were their gods. Shechin took away their bodies as a resource. Right? Boils. And those are the three. And the last took away their purpose, because Barad destroyed their food supply for the future. Arba finished off that food supply, the long-range food supply. And Choshech took away their ability to function, so they couldn't produce anything. And Makas Bechoros took away their future, took away their children, the firstborn. So the last four showed how corrupt their purpose was. The middle three showed how corrupt their resources were. And the first three showed how corrupt their identity was. And when we learn this is not what to have, then we can appreciate what we're supposed to have. Just to give you an example of how I think it could work out, let's talk about the first one. Dam. How does Dam show that the identity of the Egyptians, since they considered themselves self-made people, was corrupt? When God created us, he created us with a life force that's God-made, that keeps us alive. It's called blood. Really, if everything goes well, you don't have to resupply your blood during your lifetime, right? It's like in these worry-free batteries. You don't have to add any water. That's put there in there, and you're just worry-free. I was trying to, those batteries were worry-free. That means you don't have to pay for the worrying. You can worry for free. But by the Rabbanu Shalom, it's worth like a worry-free. Unless something goes wrong or whatever, then you need a blood transfusion or whatever. But under normal circumstances, God gave you your foundation of life called blood. But God wants you to be dynamic. He didn't want you to be a robot. So he made it that you can enhance your life and promote it with another liquid. That's called water. We ingest water. That's our contribution to our life. But we were given blood. That's the foundation of our life. When a person says, I'm a man-made person, I'm not God-made, I don't recognize the fact that God made me, I made me. So in conceptually, what is he doing? He's exchanging water for blood. He's saying, it's not the blood that makes me, it's the water that makes me. I'm a self-made man. So you're taking God's blood and you're turning it into water. God says, fine, you want to take my blood and turn it into water? I'll show you what happens when I take your water and turn it into blood. You can't survive. And just like you can't survive with your water turned into blood, you can't survive if you think that God's blood is your water. That's the foundation. And not only that, but that same source that you think is your source, you made your self-made people, from that same Yor, from that same water that you think that you're in control of, right? If you don't use it properly, it becomes very noisy and bothersome and harmful. And that's the frogs that come out of the water. And lastly, if you think that you're a self-made person and you don't realize that God made you and you have to enhance what God made but not replace it, then normally God made you the foundation of the whole world. The whole world exists for man. That's how important man is when he realizes God made. But once he thinks he's self-made, God says, not only aren't you the purpose of creation, but you're going to become the foundation for lice. Normally the world is the foundation for you. You're going to become now the foundation for lice. They're going to live on you. You're going to be the foundation and they're going to be. So even a little lice is more important than you. So that's the first three plagues. The first three plagues show the corruption of a nation that thinks they're self-made instead of God-made. So the Dam shows when you try to replace God's blood with water, what happens? God changes your water into blood. And when you think that your identity comes from that water, right? That's what you are. Don't realize that God gave it, and you're just enhancing what God gave and building on it. Then it becomes noisy and harmful, the frogs. And lastly, instead of the world being a basis for you, you become the basis for the lice. So that's, the other ones fit the same way, but maybe some other time. Yeah.
Why did they have to go down to the shrine to go through this whole thing to start? You know, it's like your story with the guy breaking his leg, okay?
Right.
Why did?
So what I didn't tell you tonight was the beginning of this part. It says that Avraham Avinu committed three sins, which each one blemished one of these aspects of our nationhood. And therefore, when you have a blemished foundation, you have to raise it and relay the foundation. You can't just put super glue in there. If you have a crack in the third floor, you can plaster it. If there's a crack in the foundation, you have to somehow take away that till the crack and then rebuild it. And that's what had to happen. That's right. Okay.